Fisheries, Southeast Fisheries conference call that took place today?
Certainly. Can I pass the gavel first to Vice Mayor Gilbert?
Yes.
I need to declare two conflicts now. The first one is that my wife and I are minority shareholders in our son's fishing business. And the second conflict is that my daughter has been hired by Sea Level to work at the processing plant this summer. She is an adult, but she does live in my home.
I find no conflict of interest on those two items.
Thank you.
Good for her.
Yeah.
Mr. Mayor?
Go ahead, Jay.
So I'd like to declare a potential conflict of interest on two points as well. Our family owns the commercial fishing vessel, McCray. We fish out of Wrangell. And our two adult children who are living at home also fish on other vessels. Secondly, I'm the executive director of the Alaska Fisheries Development Foundation, which is a seafood industry-based nonprofit dealing with statewide R&D issues.
Thank you. I don't see any conflict there, and pending any dissent from the assembly, I think we can move on. Lisa, are you all set for us here?
Yes, I believe so.
Thank you. Please take it away.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So the first thing I want to mention, and for everybody on the assembly and for the listening public, is that the National Guard will be doing a flyover tribute to medical professionals and first responders and teachers tomorrow between 12 and 12:30. We don't have an exact time, but we encourage everybody in town to go outside and look up and clap and hoot and holler as they go over and thank our medical professionals, our first responders and our teachers for doing everything they're doing here in the community for COVID and for our students and for our patients and just in general to make sure our community is in a state of readiness and response to what's going on. So, and I'd like to thank Tim Buness for arranging that tribute for our folks here in town. And thanks to him. That'll be between 12 and 12:30 tomorrow. This morning I sent an email to the assembly and to the staff outlining that there's been a lawsuit filed in state court regarding the distribution of the CARES funding. And the lawsuit is not based on the distribution plan. The lawsuit is based on the fact that by the legislature choosing to approve the plan via committee, they have essentially abdicated their constitutional mandate of appropriating funds by a vote of the body. And the lawsuit will, as we understand, go away if the legislature votes appropriately to appropriate those funds. So I did have a short conversation with Representative Ortiz this morning, and he was not sure what was going to happen. But in order to make this thing go away in the most expeditious fashion possible, the legislature is going to have to come together and vote. Otherwise, we don't know how long things will be tied up in court, because the person that has filed the lawsuit has asked the court to put a stay on the distribution of any of those funds until the legislature acts, or until the legislature makes the court system makes a determination, a formal determination about whether or not the legislature acted appropriately by allowing this to be made by a committee decision. Assuming that the lawsuit gets resolved in a reasonable amount of time, we were originally expected to receive the first payment within the next 2 weeks. I don't know how that will be pushed back. I will also let the assembly know that in order to receive any of the subsequent two payments that are allotted to us under the CARES Act funding, we have to have expended 80% of the previous payments. And I don't have the chart in front of me. I believe it was $1.8 or $1.9 million in the first payment, and then $800,000 or $900,000 a piece in the second two payments for a total of 3.84. So my math is not quite right there, but it's somewhere in that neighborhood. So There are a number of things that we're looking at. What one of the things I've indicated to the assembly is that the money can absolutely not be used for revenue replace or lost revenue replacement as a result of COVID-19, but we are allowed to use it to offset the staff expenditures that are for time spent for any of us, even our regular time going to COVID. So all of us that have any time going to COVID are tracking that. The other thing that the CARES Act specifies is that for the purposes of allowing for reimbursement, all first responders are considered to be substantially doing COVID-related response work, and so all of their time can be paid for. So we may very well be able to cover the cost of the entire police department and fire chief and fire captain in their entirety for at least a 3-month and maybe longer period. So that is exceptionally good news for us. When you think about the vast majority of my time for 3 months, the vast majority of the clerk's time for 3 months, the vast majority of the economic development director's time for 3 months, the Parks and Rec director's time for 3 months, and I'm not thinking through everything here, but we're getting into the hundreds of thousands of dollars of reimbursement to us in staff time that will help immensely in the shortfall we're expecting, toward the shortfall we're expecting for FY20. So that's heartening news. The other thing that was made very clear in the manager's meeting I was in on Wednesday is that the expectation is that now that the communities are getting this CARES money, we are expected to use the CARES money for COVID response and not apply to FEMA. And the CARES money is far more broad in what can be applied for rather than FEMA. But they cautioned municipalities specifically against taking all of the money for economic recovery and then expecting to get reimbursement for all response-related issues from FEMA. They just said that the likelihood of that is almost nil. So please don't plan to spend everything on economic recovery. And that is not to say we aren't thinking about that here. In fact, we are. And the Economic Development Committee has been looking at ways that we might be able to use a portion of that money toward economic recovery or economic relief to the businesses and the residents of this community. And they are going to be bringing forward a recommendation to the assembly, we expect, at the last meeting, at the second meeting in May. So there'll be some options that they'll be bringing forward for consideration.
Lisa, Julie's got a question for you.
Certainly, Mr. Mayor.
Standing Member Decker.
Thank you. Just to the issue of what the money can be used for, how far back can we use it to cover people's salaries and that sort of thing if they're working on
it? March.
March 1?
I believe so. I need to double check. I know things for us here started essentially on March 11th. And the reason that's sort of burned in my brain is it was the day after our assembly meeting, and it was the day I was supposed to be leaving on vacation originally, and I didn't. And then all hell broke loose. So I believe it's March 1 through December 30th is what the eligible time frame is right now.
Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, do you have a question?
No, sorry, I just said thank you.
So there are a number of other things. I won't get into all of the details, but just know myself and the finance director keeping track of what needs to be done. The other thing that we are being very careful about is that expenditures have to meet federal procurement requirements. So we have to show that we have gotten 3 quotes. And even if our code doesn't require that, so in our code, up to $10,000, you are not required to go out and competitive quotes for stuff. So, but that is not the case for that's not the case for federal procurement. So we've got to be careful that we've got that documentation there if ever we should be audited on that stuff. So Joyce is making sure of that. I mentioned this briefly on our Monday meeting, the $4 trillion COVID package that's out there right now. The finance director and I sat in on a webinar. It was a listen only webinar update from the National Association of Counties on this $4 trillion package. And it includes money that is going directly to counties and municipalities for revenue, lost revenue replacement. There are a number of other things in it. The bill is 1,800 pages long. And the NACO representative went over a whole host of things, but the long and short of it is that it will include funding that is direct for revenue replacement. And so we are obviously going to be tracking that. There'll, I'm sure, be some sort of application period. They expect the House on Wednesday, when we had that call, NACO expected the House to vote on stuff tomorrow. She didn't have a timeline on when the Senate might be taking it up. So we'll see what happens there. But that's good news for revenue replacement for sure. The other thing that the NACO representative indicated is that the CARES Act money that was distributed to states is in many states not being shared with county and municipal governments. In many states, states are holding it. And not only are they in many states saying, we don't know whether we're going to share this money, in many states, they are just not sharing it. They've said, no, the states are in charge of keeping that money. And so I feel like we are exceptionally lucky in Alaska that this money has been distributed to the municipalities. And it's actually going to be my suggestion that we send correspondence to the governor thanking him for this, because we could be one of a number of states where regional and local governments are just getting nothing. And that is absolutely not the case here. So if the assembly is okay, I'd like to draft a letter for the mayor's signature to just say thank you on behalf of Rangel. We recognize that this is not what's going on across the country, and we thank you for your leadership in distributing this money at the local level. So let me see here. Hang on just a moment. There was a new reopen Rangel Responsibly Task Force newsletter that came out yesterday. And so that information went out to the public. Additional information on reopening, guidance there to the businesses. And tomorrow from 1 to 2:30, the Reopen Rangel Task Force will be hosting Zoom meetings for businesses, Q&A session going over mandates and reopening requirements and talking about what their needs are. And speaking of needs, the borough is working to try to pull together some PPE and supply items that we know are difficult for businesses to get. And Kim has been working with, the mayor put Kim in touch with a supplier that Alaska Brewing Company had for hand sanitizer. And actually today, Kim finalized an order for 12 cases of 4 each 1 gallon containers. So what is that? 4 times 12, 48, I guess. 1 gallon containers. I'm sorry, Assemblymember Gilbert, my brain's all over the place. I can't do easy multiplication. I'm so embarrassed. I digress. We're getting 48 1 gallon containers of hand sanitizer that we will be working to try to distribute out to the businesses as necessary. One of the things that we talked about with the Reopen Rangel Task Force folks is getting working with the businesses, including the fishing fleet, to come up with what their supply and PPE needs are. How much hand sanitizer do they need? How much bleach do they need? We're working on some alternatives with the water plant. It doesn't sound like manufacturing bleach is going to be the best way to do it, but there's a supply of the bleach-like material. I can't think of the scientific name that they call it up there. They get huge barrels of stuff that is far more concentrated than normal household bleach. And that can be distributed out and mixed with water so that people have bleach solution. And so that's something that our public works director started looking into today, was just ordering a huge number of these barrels that could perhaps be distributed out to the specifically to the fishing fleet who is going to need a bunch of bleach. So we're trying to get information on what the needs are and help in any way we can. One of the other interesting things that's going on is there is wastewater testing being done around the country for COVID to determine COVID spread in a community. There are the Department of Environmental Conservation here in the state of Alaska is actually doing pilot testing in Anchorage and in Fairbanks. And in fact, Ketchikan and Sitka are working with a private company to look at wastewater testing. And Jamie Roberts reached out to them today and got the company information. And our couple of our EOC folks, Captain Spray and Jamie Roberts, are going to be working with Andrew Scambler at wastewater to figure out what testing we can do here and see. And it looks like what it actually does is provides an idea of, based on the concentration of what they find in the wastewater, gives you an idea of what the prevalence is of the infection in your community, so that you have an idea versus positive tests to what is actually out there in the community. And the mayor may want to speak to that a little bit more. He did a little bit of reading on it today also.
Well, it's absolutely no use if it's not specific to prevalence. If it's just a yes or no, then, you know, that has limited value. It's actually been built off a model from MIT. And so as you have a virus, you actually shed the virus through your feces and urine, and that virus winds up in the domestic sewage treatment. And they've been able to do, through mathematical equations, Patty, I know you get excited about this, they've been able to create formulas and models that actually allow them to be able to look at the viral load that's in the municipal waste and then extrapolate that into a tangible figure. And so, of course, the problem with the model, there's no way to actually verify unless you had a close, very small population that you could test and then do that, you know, go to the municipal waste and test that cohort group exactly. But they're pretty confident in their numbers, and universities are looking at it because they feel they actually will be able to take dormitories and look at the waste coming out of a dormitory and actually sample that to determine what level of rate of infection is within the dormitory, which would allow them to control spread on campus. And so it's been used, and I believe Petersburg is also, I could be wrong on that, Lisa.
I'm looking into it as well, yep. Petersburg
is also. Well, I wasn't very excited initially, I have to be honest, but then I got more excited when I kind of understood the metrics of it and that it would actually come up with a number. But the other thing is, I don't want to cause an artificial panic either. Like I think we also need to be realistic to understand that the number may be high, the number may be low, but it just gives us a little bit more information. And wouldn't it be super sweet if the number was zero? I mean, I doubt that, but that would be great.
That would be great. Actually, it was HUNA that first brought this to my attention a number of weeks ago that they were looking into as well. So I wanted to just update, switching from wastewater to fun, parks and recreation. There was a release that went out today from Parks and Recreation. We are reopening playgrounds and community shelters. Not quite ready yet to open public bathrooms. And I know Assemblymember Decker, that's been something you've talked to me about. The harbor master and the Parks and Rec director are working together on a concerted effort to try to figure out protocol and how to get those bathrooms open. But I know that's been a big issue, and that's we've got our summer maintenance, parks maintenance staff on now, and part of their job is going to be cleaning bathrooms. But it's the protocol and the frequency with which that is done is changing. And so we're having to put some special things in place before we open those up, but we are actively working on that. So if anybody has any questions regarding the facility usage, the guidelines under which we're asking people to follow are posted online on the city's Facebook page, on the COVID website, and I believe went on to the community page as well.
Lisa, I have a question for you. Did you get those porta potties in for the workers down there?
They've not arrived yet, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
I'll confirm.
Yeah, I think probably, does it, because we no longer have in-state quarantine, like, or for the critical workforce, is that still, so if somebody brings their boat here, if I travel to Ketchikan, I don't have to quarantine anymore. If somebody travels here from Ketchikan to work on their boat, they're not required to quarantine anymore, correct?
Correct.
So it's
just no.
I'm a pleasure boater and I bring my pleasure boat up here.
There's a 14-day quarantine in place for anybody arriving from out of state. So if you came from Seattle and it only took you 12 days, you've got 2 days of quarantine. If you want to quarantine on your boat in the yard, you need a porta potty.
Okay.
Yeah.
We weren't requiring any quarantine for infrastructure previously. Okay. Thank you. That's great. So I just would like to know that we're getting those and have them available. I think it's just a good idea for us to have them available generally. It's going to lessen the demand on those other facilities and spread, you know, basically, I think it's just cleaner and better for the community. I almost wish we had more.
We can use them well after that for a variety of different things.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, I believe based on our unified command call this week that probably next week CERCH will be rolling out information on community-wide testing. And so we're hopeful that information will be coming soon. There is, and Assemblymember Decker may be able to speak to this in more detail. We know that there are provisions that are going to be coming down regarding testing of the fishing industry, not just in processing, but also maybe even set up in harbors to test vessel crews coming into ports. And we're just getting snippets of information. How all that's gonna work, we don't really know yet. What we understand, although it hasn't been confirmed, is that the feds are paying for the testing and that they are, the state is looking for organizations or groups in communities to provide this testing, submit proposals to be able to manage that testing. It doesn't necessarily have to be done through the clinic or the hospital. So I'm making this up. I'm not suggesting it, that maybe the Chamber of Commerce in a community would submit a proposal to do the testing. My understanding is that Kroger in Anchorage is actually doing testing. They're providing their employees to do the testing that's being provided community-wide. So
I think with Kroger, sorry, Lisa, I think with Kroger, it's actually their pharmacy staff.
Oh, is that what's, okay.
That's what's going on there. The testing from the state, from the feds, there's a lot. There's some limitations to the volume that they're going to be able to pump through. And so instead of clearing somebody as they walk up the ramp and 10 minutes later they're good to go into town, that may happen for some, but it sounds like they're still doing, they're still looking at doing sendouts because the machine can only do 3 an hour or something, which in Wrangell actually may be enough, but I think in other ports it may not be. But the one thing that I want us to start talking about at some point through EOC, but we're going to need to be sharing some of these supplies with cruise ships because we're seeing more and more indication that cruise ships are planning on coming back. And so we have to, you know, support those businesses as well. So there's going to have to be sort of a discussion at some point about how we're going to rally to support that because, I mean, or not, but we have to have those discussions and figure out how we're going to make it safe for everyone.
Certainly. Mr. Mayor, I don't know if Assemblymember Decker has any more information on that testing or not.